Hello, it's about 5 p.m. here on the island of Patmos, where St. John wrote the book of the Apocalypse, also called Revelation. Probably morning where most of you are watching this. And so today on Patmos, this island in Greece, where the book of Apocalypse or Revelation was written, I want to give you some of my own thoughts on St. John. You know, in the West, we Roman Catholics call him St. John the Evangelist. Sometimes we call him St. John the Beloved. It's one of my favorite parishes out in D.C. But in the East, they call him St. John the Theologian. And I think a lot of people think of theologian as kind of brainiac, maybe living in your mind instead of your heart. But the point of this video is I'm going to show where head and heart meet in the apostles, and really where the apostle who constantly speaks of love was also a great heresy hunter and fighter. Most people don't think of him as that, but we're going to look at that today. So I did my own low mass, traditional Latin mass, just about 7 feet from here, all by myself, except God and the angels, saints, and of course Our Lady. And I prayed especially before mass that St. John and St. Mary would guide my thoughts and my holy mass here. But what hit me during mass is obviously all of the apostles are extremely chosen, but there's something very extraordinary about St. John. There's a lot of things that are extraordinary. Look at John chapter 6. He has the longest discourse on the Holy Eucharist. He writes the most about how our Lord Jesus says, "My flesh is real food and my blood is real drink." And then we have the fact that of the initial 12, not including Paul, of course, of the initial 12, St. John wrote the most books of the Bible. And then we also have the fact that, well, I think this is the most striking that really hit me at Mass, is the connection between virginity and the cross and Our Lady. That, oh wait, before I get there, this is tied to the Eucharist also, is John was the one who laid his head on the chest of Jesus. And so, I don't want to say he's the most Eucharistic, but he certainly writes the most about the Eucharist. And then he lays his head on the Sacred Heart. Kind of interesting that all the Eucharistic miracles end up being cardiac muscle. And so that, you know, that contemplation, that holding so close to the heart of Jesus, plus his virginity, is why the Church Fathers say, well, at least they say this contributed to his courage to be the one who didn't flee at the cross. You know, I was thinking of this at Mass, that of all the apostles, you know, they probably lived repentance their whole lives, but the one that had the crucifixion burned into his memory for life was John. He was very unique in that. He was the only one who was there. I don't think, and maybe a few of the other ones peeked from afar, but my understanding from the Bible is the only one who was there was St. John. So that would have been burned in his mind in the cave just a couple miles from here. Even when he wrote the Apocalypse, even when he was, in some extremely high level of heaven while his body was here on earth writing the book of the Apocalypse, the crucifixion was burned in his mind. In fact, if you read the book of St. John, if you read the Gospel of St. John, the glory is the crucifixion. And so the Church Fathers say it was his virginity. You know, most of the apostles left their wives to follow Christ. Maybe they came in their troops, but they certainly maintained continence with them their whole life. That's certainly a point for us in the West, I think, over the East, that all the apostles were expected to live continence. But we're not getting into East and West debates. The fact is that St. John was a virgin, and the Fathers are very clear that contributed to his courage to stand at the foot of the cross, and probably this tremendous purity in his life was why he was asked to take Mary as his mother, and Mother Mary to take John. That's right in John 19 right there, that he becomes the adoptive son of Mary. And that's also further proof Mary had no other biological children besides Jesus, because in Jewish culture, if someone were executed, it would obviously be the other people, the other sons, to take care of her. So John becomes the one to take care of Our Lady, and they go to Ephesus, a couple hundred miles from here, where they just, can you imagine the prayer life between St. John and St. Mary? Probably you know, all night vigils and eating very little food, and just tremendous to think of the interior lives of John and Mary. But the fathers are very clear that the courage of standing at the foot of the cross was linked to his virginity, was linked to his love of Our Lady. And you know, St. John Bosco, he wrote about 100 years ago quite a bit about these days of this church crisis, and he makes it very clear that the two pillars to get us through this is the Eucharist and Our Lady. And that's another thing that hit me here on the island of Patmos is all the apostles loved all of these things that we as Catholics love, but at least the one chosen to write the most about the Eucharist and Mary was St. John. So there's a real connection to our current state of the church and who St. John is. Now, this is an interesting island. Patmos, I just got here several hours ago, and I'm pretty surprised there's a heavy New Age influence here. There was a vegan place with the TRANNY flag up. There's a bunch of, there's even crystals and stuff in town. Very strange that there's a New Age influence here. Now, I haven't made it all the way up to the monastery built very close to the cave where St. John wrote the Apocalypse. But, you know, God obviously knew that this island would be eventually influenced. And influenced by some weird religions. And I think St. John is often seen as the most mysterious of the apostles, and maybe because of that, the most amorphous, and I think, unfortunately, the least serious. Now, it is true he put just absolute emphasis on charity, just constantly. And again, all the apostles did, but we have these records of him. This is even in the old Divine Office, if you read on his feast day. So this isn't just like a modernist myth, but it's even in the old Divine Office on St. John that his followers were asking him, you know, can you give us a word? Tell us what to do. And he just kept saying, little children love one another. Well, what else do you have to tell us? Little children love one another. Filioli in the Latin there. Filioli, love one another. And it just, you know, kept saying that. And someone finally said to him, probably one of his more bold disciples, why is that all you say? He said, because that's all there is. And so maybe that this hyper-emphasis, which of course I bless, not that St. John needs my blessing, this hyper-emphasis on the gift of charity is very pronounced in St. John. And maybe that's why some people run with this in the wrong direction and kind of take the fact that he's the more mysterious one, and they turn it into this amorphous, nebulous theology. But now here's part of the video that maybe some of you kind of expect. I'm sure when all you do is attack modernism, people tend to think, oh, the only tool you have in your toolbox is a hammer. That must be the only tool that you have in your box is a hammer. That's all you're going to use. But I want you to hear everything I just said on St. John before I get to this. But the other thing that hit me on Patmos is, as I was thinking about the book of Apocalypse, about the book of Revelation, it also hit me that was sort of the proto-Pascendi. You know, Pope St. Pius X wrote Pascendi in not only attacking modernism, but this great warning of what would happen. Now, the first book I read that really delved into St. John was The Lamb's Supper by Scott Hahn. And now he goes to Latin Mass. Most people don't accuse him of being a rad trad. Occasionally they do, and he kind of walks it back. But I did love that book 20 years ago when I was first having my conversion. I'm sure it's still good. I just haven't read it in a long time. But the point is, long before I was a traditionalist, I remember reading how Scott Hahn points out that in the book of the Apocalypse, St. John writes to all these different churches, the church in Ephesus, the church in Smyrna, all these places. And those are all in modern day Turkey, where there's almost no Catholic churches left. And so God speaking through St. John, threatening to extinguish the light of these churches in the first century, that was no empty threat. He was saying, return to me or this is going to happen. And that was the first century. And then we have almost no churches, no Catholic churches left in Turkey today. And I remember when I read that 20 years ago thinking, wow, you know, it's really good. Our church in the United States is so solid, and we would never go through that. I don't mean that sarcastically. That's really how naive I was 20 years ago. I just thought, I'm really glad we're not Turkey. But as we're going to see, St. John, sitting in this cave just a couple miles up from me 2,000 years ago, he was warning against heresy. He was warning against diverting from the once delivered apostolic faith on morals, on issues most Catholics today do not like to talk about. And so just as Pope St. Pius X attacked modernism, and I'm sure, again, some people are going to think, well, the only tool you got in your box is a hammer, that's all you're going to use. But really, if you read the first few chapters of the Apocalypse, it becomes very clear that St. John is warning against coming heresy. So here's a few examples. I had to write these down. Obviously, I don't have the Bible memorized very well. But this is from the church in Ephesus. God says through St. John, I know your works, your toil, and your patient endurance, and how you cannot bear with those who are evil, but have tested those who call themselves apostles and are not, and found them to be false. Now, can you imagine if, say, a prelate, a prelate in the Vatican, I'm actually not implying anybody like I usually do, I mean just in happier days, maybe a cardinal in the Vatican writing to the USCCB saying, yeah, you guys always throw that term around, successor of the apostles, but I found you to be false. I mean, we would say this guy is way out of line saying that, right? But this is St. John saying that. And I think for us, it's just in one eye, out the other, because we chalk it up to Bible land, and we don't realize how severe of a reprimand or an admonition this was for St. John to say, yeah, you guys think you're apostles, but you're not. And he wasn't talking to the 12 apostles, he's talking about the church there. Listen to what he says. It's a little bit better what he says to the church in Smyrna. He gives a little bit of a dig on them for pretending like they're poor but having all this money. But then he has words of encouragement because they have persecution coming. He says, I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich, and the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear what you're about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested, and for 10 days you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. And then we have to the church in Thyatira. God says through St. John, again, this is, the book of the Apocalypse or Revelation. I know your works, your love and faith and service and patient endurance, and that your latter works exceed the first. But I have this against you, that you tolerate that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess, and is teaching and seducing my servants to practice sexual immorality and to eat food sacrificed to idols. Now, can you imagine if, and now I am going to imply somebody today, if someone wrote a public letter against, say, idols in Rome, against the Jezebel spirit in Rome, against sexual immorality. I mean, the only bishop in the world doing it to that extent right now is Vigano. And again, we've all read the first few books of Revelation numerous times, but again, we chalk it up to Bible land. Do we really realize that this saint who's seen as like so mysterious is hammering away at heresy? This man who speaks only of love, who rested his head on the chest of Jesus, who knew the Sacred Heart of Jesus, which is the Eucharist, who was entrusted to take Mary home for years. This one who is at the highest levels of the unitive stage of prayer, which is union with God, who is love. The one who actually wrote God is love, the only one who wrote that in the Bible, is the one hammering away at heresies here. There's no contradiction between hammering away at heresies and being one who loves. In fact, if you read there's a whole huge book by St. Alphonsus Liguori that talks about the history of heresies, and you might be surprised, the first century already had heresies. And so I think the story I'm about to read you happened after St. John was here on Patmos, but I might be wrong. But I'm gonna read you directly from St. Alphonsus Liguori, and he talks about a heretic not many people know about, including myself, and his name's Cerinthus. And this is right after he talks about a first century heretic named Menander. And so this is what St. Alphonsus Liguori writes about the heretic Cerinthus and St. John the Apostle. He says, Cerinthus was the next after Menander, but he began to broach his doctrine in the same year. His errors can be reduced to four heads. He denied that God was the creator of the world. He asserted that the law of Moses was necessary for salvation. He also taught that after the resurrection, Jesus Christ would establish a terrestrial kingdom in Jerusalem, where the just would spend 1,000 years in the enjoyment of every sensual pleasure. And finally, he denied the divinity of Jesus Christ. The account Bernini gives of his death is singular. The Apostle John, he says, that's again John who wrote the last book of the Bible on this island, where I am, Patmos. The Apostle John, he says, met him going into a bath. Doesn't mean a single bath. This is like ancient spas, you know. When turning to those along with him, he said, let us hasten out of this, lest we be burned alive. That's what St. John said, because he saw a heretic. He wouldn't even basically be in a public gym bathroom with a guy he said was a heretic, lest we be burned alive. And they had scarcely gone outside when the whole building fell with a sudden crash, and the unfortunate Cerinthus was overwhelmed in the ruins. So at basically the word of St. John right there, a heretic died. God's wrath came down upon him. See why he was called the Son of Thunder? In fact, it's interesting because remember when James and John want to call down fire upon that town that doesn't listen to Jesus? Jesus rebukes them. And I think most people think, oh, so Jesus was the hippie and these guys were like the ultra-military meanies, and the hippie corrected the meanies. No, Jesus did not temper their zeal. He directed their zeal. First, they had to learn violence against themselves and a life of mortification. And then, apparently, they were able to call down God's wrath. That's from St. Alphonsus Liguori right there, that a heretic who tried to even be near St. John was destroyed. So here you have this man who speaks nothing of love, is entrusted as the Virgin to take care of the Blessed Virgin Mary, writes more of the Eucharist than anyone else, rests his head against Christ's heart, is at the crucifixion. He's the only apostle I know of who is even at the crucifixion. Burned in his mind as he's on this island of Patmos writing the Apocalypse. And so the apostle of love, John the Beloved, John the Evangelist, John the Theologian, is also a heresy hunter. He's warning people. Why? Precisely because he loves them. This is why these things are not contradictory. To love God is to take care of his people. And one of the most destructive things, as Pope St. Pius X showed us, was heresy. So St. John is a heresy hunter. He's a destroyer of heresies, just like all the great saints. And so realize that if you're a little low on the charity but high on the heresy hunting scales, just increase the charity. Doesn't mean you have to reduce the other. If you believe that charity equals kindness, well, that's part of it. I think too often we say it's, charity isn't kindness, and that implies we're supposed to be not kind. No, of course. Of course, part of charity is kindness. But if you believe in kindness and not destroying heresies, well, keep the kindness and ratchet it up on the orthodoxy. Because this is the great example that we have of St. John the Beloved, the heresy hunter, here on the island of Patmos. God bless you. Bye-bye.